Shout out Spotlight Delaware. Lieutenant Governor Hall Long's campaign team is getting shaken up again. Carl Baker, 31 July 2024. Following a week of audit-fueled turmoil, Lieutenant Governor Bethany Hall Long's gubernatorial campaign team will reorganize under a new manager who previously worked in the Lieutenant Governor's office. The new campaign manager, Matt Daugherty, who starts on Friday, also previously served as a congressional aide for various lawmakers, including Delaware's own U.S. Senator Tom Carper, said Dan McCormick, a spokesman for Hall Long's campaign. Daugherty's ascension to the top spot coincides with the departures of Hall Long campaign director Quentin Heilbroner, who led field operations, among other duties, and her finance director, Sydney Diewald. Asked if Daugherty is replacing Heilbroner, McCormick said that it's fairish to say. He said Daugherty will give a new focus to the campaign going forward in the final weeks. When pressed, McCormick also acknowledged that frustrations exist among the departing staff members, but asserted that Heilbroner and Diewald are leaving the campaign amicably. Hall Long is a leading candidate to become Delaware's Democratic nominee for governor, with recent polls showing her lead over opponents ranging from 2% to the double digits. The primary election will occur on September 10th. Her staffing shakeup follows a week of turmoil for her campaign, sparked by the July 25th release of an audit report that found that Hall Long's husband, Dana Long, withdrew nearly $300,000 from the candidate committee account between 2016 and 2023. The total exceeded the amount he gave to Hall Long's campaign by about $33,000, according to the report, which has been commissioned by the Delaware Department of Elections. Over the years, Dana Long, who had served as Hall Long campaign treasurer, frequently used his personal credit card to pay campaign expenses, even when his wife's political account had plenty of money, the report stated. Then he would periodically transfer cash back into his own private bank account. He did so without the aid of spreadsheets to track his payments. Following the release of the report last week, he didn't use Excel.
Just get in there, buddy. Write some VLOOKUPs, man. Come on, get in there. Write a couple nested if statements and you're done.
Perfect. Following the release of the report last week, Hall Long's Democratic opponents in the governor's race, Colin O'Mara and Matt Meyer, separately called for further investigations. O'Mara, Delaware's former top environmental regulator, said the state attorney general should appoint an independent counsel to probe further into the controversy, according to WHYY. Meyer, who serves as Newcastle County's executive, said U.S. prosecutors should open an investigation. Meanwhile, Hall Long has denied the report's central finding but hasn't provided details to support why she believes the report's conclusions are in error. Last week, she released statements to several media outlets saying, "Our family has loaned the campaign more money than we have been reimbursed." The release of the audit report following months of scrutiny and suspicions around Hall Long's campaign finances that began last fall with another shakeup of her campaign staff. At the time, several staffers resigned from Hall Long's then-fledgling gubernatorial campaign after learning that her previous candidate committee had made large and unreported cash transfers to Dana Long. In the subsequent months, Hall Long hired a small Dover accounting firm to conduct a review of her finances. By November, she released to the election department a string of amended campaign finance filings going back to 2016. Since then, her opponents and members of the media have repeatedly called on Hall Long to release the accountant's review, which she claimed only discovered financial reporting errors that were subsequently corrected in her amended campaign finance reports. Declare your support of independent journalism.
In the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. This is Rob. This is your Highlands Bunker podcast. We have a controversy. We have a political brouhaha. We have a scandal. I think I've heard a pretty good scandal. Bill, thank you for catching us up. We'll do another little TikTok in a few minutes. But I want to introduce our guest, who's particularly placed to speak about these issues and has spoken publicly again this week in an op-ed in the News Journal endorsing Matt Meyer, the former chair of the Delaware Democratic Party, Eric Razorshown. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's very exciting for you to come in.
Excited to finally be here.
Yeah, I know. We've gone back and forth a few times, and, you know, it works how it works.
Exactly.
Sort of we were talking earlier that a lot of things in life just you sort of have to arrive to organically. Yeah. I think it's sort of like that.
absolutely.
But Carl's here as well. He's been doing espionage all day. He's been on the dark web, you know, sending encrypted emails to HQ, all the shit he does. But he's on top of it. Believe me. Watch what happens. Everybody just watch what Carl does.
International man of mystery.
Really is. He really is. So Eric, you've been around these parts so long. I wanted to give you sort of the standard question and talk about like where you grew up and what it was like, and how you arrived in the world of Delaware politics.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty fascinating story as I look back. I was born and raised on a big dairy farm in Western New York. Loved my father to death. He was off the boat from Germany at the age of 14. It was a big family farm. Lived at home all my way through college. And then after college, I decided to join AmeriCorps. But to back up a bit, my father had very, very, very conservative leanings. I mean, we grew up, and I hate using this word, but I'll use it just to, you know, we would listen to his view of what Rush Limbaugh would say on the tractor every day while listening on the radio at the dinner table. My father also had a view that, and he would share it openly to us, that, you know, faggots should be killed. I mean, my father didn't like black people. He didn't like Jewish people. He didn't like people who had babies out of wedlock, and he didn't like gay people. And all that being said, I didn't know what was going on in my head, but I knew whatever I was, it wasn't okay. So I actually didn't come out until I got to Delaware at 23. But, you know, my journey here is interesting because I joined AmeriCorps I just had this feel to go out and help people. Did my first year out in Denver, Colorado, then was recruited to Delaware, which I was like, why Delaware? But at that point, if you did a second year of AmeriCorps, you got a free master's degree at the University of Delaware. So I was like, well, that's a lot cheaper than paying at CU Boulder. So I ended up here and will forever be grateful for my time in politics. I mean, I tell people as I've exited, it was 22 years. It was an amazing career that I didn't choose. It happened to me, as you were saying. You know, I taught, before I got into politics, I taught first grade special ed at Brookside Elementary School in Newark. And that's when I met Senator Sekola, and he convinced me to run his first race in 2002. And, you know, from that, it went on to, you know, coordinator for Governor Minner's reelection campaign in 2004. Then I went into the governor's office. I was miserable there. I just liked the campaign trail. So ended up going to work for Governor Markell after coincidentally talking to both summer of 2005, Markell and Carney talked to me. Carney wanted me to come on board 4 years out for his gubernatorial. Carney wanted me to come on board 2 years. So I chose
hot
that.
Commodity.
Good. Look at you. Yes. And look.
But it'll be interesting.
And it worked out.
It worked out.
One thing. You could be living, as we said, you should be living in Villa Taverna right now. Aren't you in Villa Taverna?
I would like to point out, and it didn't really, I mean, I remember it, but it's dawned on me, and I've shared it a lot over the last 48 hours, but, you know, because I often get frustrated with Governor Carney. He was very frustrated with
you
me
do. when I was state party chair. You're really preaching, you know, to the choir here.
He often said it was his party, and I would correct him and say,
I don't know if you're trying to flatter me, but it's working.
But I'll never forget where I was standing the day I called and told him that I decided to go to work for Governor Markell, then Treasurer Markell, in his reelect. And he just said very clearly, okay, but you just need to understand you will never work for me. But what has dawned on me, like here now, you know, almost 20 years later, is that like that kind of goes back to my right. It attacks your ego, and it attacked my ego at that point. But we've always butted heads. So anyways, I ended up in the political stuff until last summer. And that's when I finally decided to, you know, I've been sober for 3 years. I kind of was struggling a little bit with my mental health. I was blessed to have an opportunity to go out to Utah for 3 weeks to a wellness retreat where I was exposed to absolutely everything from meditation, yoga, Reiki, rapid eye movement, acupuncture. You know, it was no gluten, no sugar, no alcohol, very clean for the, and it was
called
the 21
out the Carl Stomberg
right?
diet.
And, but it was during that time that I finally realized for the first time in my life, which is sad, but I'm now grateful for, that I was good enough without politics. I could be myself. I could have my own voice. And I didn't need politics to be relevant to be good enough for anybody. Right. And that was my own journey. But I'm now grateful to be here, which is also now me being here today. Right. Because, you know, I don't want to say blind loyalty, but I was blind loyalty to the Delaware Democratic Party and blind loyalty to getting people elected. I did have my views, my ethics, my morals, which I always strongly believed that it was wrong for the party to endorse. And I ran on that when I ran for state party chair. People love that. You know, that's what I advocated for when I was state party chair during that tenure. You know, it still happens sometimes, but I would come out of the gate at each meeting saying, you know, I would entertain a motion to not endorse. So this cycle, I was going to sit it out. I said, I'm done with this. You know, certified forest therapist now. Like, you know, where are my beads?
I like the sound of that.
Right. Yeah. You guys can come down to the farm sometime and I'll take you. We're fortunate. Our 10-acre farm backs up to 1,700 acres of Blackbird State Forest to 27 miles of trails.
Oh, so nice.
Always out there. But
we might have to go. We might have to retreat there in tents at some point. Yeah. So just. But,
I often joke around with the state of the world right now, and sometimes Delaware, that I'm just going to build a wall around the farm and invite people in that I love. So anyways, I was just going to be out of it. But when I saw the party endorsed, I started to get really riled up a couple weeks ago. I mean, obviously the stories that came out last fall, but that's why I'm here today. I mean, it's, you know, I decided finally it's okay to use my voice. My voice doesn't belong to anybody. I don't have loyalties to anybody, you know, and some people have tried to attack me over the past couple of days. Well, you're just doing this because, you know, you want Matt Meyer. I had the opportunity to work for Matt Meyer for 2 years, just like I had the opportunity to work for Governor Minner, you know, for Governor Markell, for Speaker Bob Gilligan. Like, I saw the inside workings and see the elected official behind the curtains. And when all this was happening, you know, it pushed me there. I'm like, you know, it's time to speak up. But my big beef, I might have endorsed Matt in the opinion piece today, but it's just the Democratic Party and engaging. Because the reality, too, is we have had a track record as a party over the last many cycles, is if we do endorse, those people have more often than not lost. And when we endorse people, what does it mean? Nothing. We don't do anything. I'm saying we now, the party, I should say. I no longer need to say we. But there's no resources. There's no door knocking. I mean, the McGinnis, Lydia York was very unique. I mean, in that race, we decided the party to put money in because they were trying to oust, you know, McGinnis. But, you know, that's real. That's me. That's why I'm here today. And just the opportunity to talk to you and answer questions.
It's interesting because, number one, I could see how someone would, like, start to get blind loyalty to sort of any organization that they get into. I mean, that's kind of...
It's like a fraternity.
Yeah, it's an organizational behavior that, you know, they're going to... That's certainly going to happen. I do find it interesting that everybody cries about having motives, like political motives. Well, of course, everybody has political motives, number one. Number two is, like, everyone knows that behind the scenes, and you just mentioned it, that people like John Carney say, well, you'll never work for me because you chose this other person. We know that right now the party is endorsing certain people and not endorsing others. And not endorsing others in very strange ways. Like, again, I'm not endorsing anyone. I'm trying to stay out of sort of the political day-to-day. But it's weird that, like, Nick Beard's running against a Republican. I didn't see her get endorsed. Did she get endorsed?
I didn't even realize that. They didn't endorse her.
Well, that's odd. So what about Frank Burns? He didn't get endorsed. What about, so you threw a bunch of money at Lydia York to keep McGinnis out, but now McGinnis gets the committee endorsement in her party. Why would that possibly be? Well, people behind the scenes are, you know, just protecting their own shit and protecting their own, as Carnegie was doing with you 20 years ago.
Right, right. And the reality is, like, that's politics, right? And I think I kind of came in as this idealistic kid from Western New York, right? And as I was being pulled in, but I'm like, I often thought I could change the system, I could change the process. You realize quickly on you can't. So then it's like, okay, these people like me. So how do I continue to move up? Well, I'll keep supporting these people. And you know, I'm not saying every single person. I mean, there were definitely folks that I would raise a red flag in my hand and be like, hey, you know, I remember early on when we took the majority in the state house, you know, Speaker Gilligan challenged me to, like, reorganize. And, you know, when I came in, there was no employee handbook, there was no hiring process, there was no standard. Like, as your legislative, you're paid this. You were paid based on who you knew, what you knew. And, you know, as I started doing all that stuff, the Senate got pissed off. I mean, at that point, it was Senator Thurman Adams, Senator Nancy Cook. And I remember being hauled over there one night saying, Gilligan's like, just go over there and talk to them. And I just said, this is what I'm doing. This is what, you know, we cut $70,000 from gold letterhead. Just all this stupid shit that was happening, which I'm like, okay, we just said to the voters, give us a chance and take the majority. We will be a good steward of your money. We will cut waste and we will do all this. But it was just wild. I was like, how am I getting here? And now folks in my own party are attacking me for what we're doing. But, you know, that's where I would just push. I said to you, I mean, I had a drinking problem. The crazy part, when I got sober 3 years ago, every elected official, everybody that I've ever worked with said, we didn't know you had a drinking problem. I was, I think, the most pro high functioning alcoholic that could be, because, but the problem was, and it was really scary, is I would do this stuff and then go home and eat myself alive, but use the alcohol as a coping mechanism.
Yeah, that's no, that can't
and,
be good.
And so that's why being here today and finally having this voice and like, you know, I don't have to worry. I'm also blessed and fortunate that, as I said to you guys, I'm doing the certified forest therapy stuff. And like, this isn't my livelihood anymore.
Yeah.
And I know some people, that's also the game here, right? Like, you have to pay your bills. This is their job. This is what they've done for 20 years. So what do I do? Do I actually stand up and say this person is bad? Or do I just keep my mouth shut?
Yeah, it's a weird forward. Situation to be yeah. in for that reason, because it's like your job now, and you have it. But there can be some consistency and professionalism, yeah. I think, which there isn't.
Right.
I'm also fascinated that you were drawn to that, to politics and supporting that as a. You know, as a background player, really. Did you ever run? You never ran for office.
No. And I think what it is, Rob, which I think is really interesting.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You had to, you were like, I like politics, but not the person who, I want to be the behind the scenes doing all that jazz.
But I think what it was is like, and again, the way I grew up, the family, I'm an empath. I'm a people pleaser. I want to fix things. Like, I'm a project manager. I landed here. I think if other opportunities, which who knows what they would have been there for that 23 naive kid that moved to Delaware, it would have been that. But the other thing that happened quickly, and this is ego, right, is like, they love me. They love my work. They want me to do this again. Okay, some of those things were iffy on the campaign. But, you know, I think I was saying off there before we started, I equate politics to me to just like drugs, sex, alcohol, right? Like any of your vices. And I had an addiction to it. And after every campaign, I said, I am done. I can't do this anymore. And I'd wake up the morning after the election and be sad that it was over and be looking for my next fix.
You are, that's crazy.
It is crazy. I mean, I can sit here today and say it's crazy.
I would say then, this, it makes sense. Being in a sort of high-paced job like that, that actually has a definite winner and loser.
Yeah.
You know, so I could see why somebody would get into that.
Yeah.
So it's not outside of
right.
my
The other thing you have
creativity.
To remember, right, is that allowed me to never have to be alone in my head with myself, mm-hmm. whether it be physically, because I worked crazy hours, right? So up until I met my husband, you know, when I was 36 and got married and had kids, like that was my safe place. So I didn't have to think of like in my dark demons that were in my head and what I didn't like, right? Just focus and grind. And that's where I think the addictive piece kind of came in for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I could see that because I think a lot of addictive people have those types of jobs. Maybe not in politics, some in politics, of course. Yeah. But yeah, I can see it. It's just like I goof on politics so much because it's just I don't know. It doesn't seem to me, of all the different kinds of people I deal with, some of the people that are working on politics are really some of the most craven. Sort of empty suits that you could ever meet. And I thought about it again when I was reading your piece this morning about the Delaware way. You get in it, but there's winning the election. Because I noticed you said that the fix was the election result. Right. So you do this high up and down the state, and you're doing this, and you're sending out press releases and doing all that jazz, and then there's a result. You won, you lost, whatever. Then you go on to the next one. But the stuff in between there is like, that's like the legal stuff.
And the most
important. We're trying to get people health care and housing in there somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's also why, like, I mean, I was only in the Governor Minner's office from January of 2005 through August, and I was miserable because it was slow, right? I loved that fast pace of campaigns. So that's why I'm like, I'm not supposed to be in government. And if you kind of look at my, I mean, it was interesting because I was at the State House for almost 5 years, but in the after hours, like I came in when we were in the minority in 2007. So, you know, by day I was doing the government stuff, but I spent every evening and weekend doing the political stuff. But then I would often say, you know, there were times too where, and please don't ask me for names because I will not say them, but there's been people I've got elected, worked on special elections, and then been disgusted with myself, right? Because what I forget is it's not just about electing him. Then when you get him elected, they have to govern. And what I used to tell people, believe it or not, was like, well, that's not my problem. I'm the guy that elects him. You have to have somebody else, right? So I used to separate that. But then you realize, like, you're part of the problem.
Yeah, not only that. I mean, we're all implicated in some fashion. Yeah. But the other part of it is just being like, The problem is once they get that's the kind of person, once they get that win, as we see now, this is sort of how we started this conversation, they're going to do anything. They're going to make weird alliances. They're going to treat you in a weird way.
Yeah.
And they have sort of like, there's something about their personalities that's, I'm going to call it deficient. You don't have to call it that. But like, they don't know how to interact with people other than to band into little cliques and bully people. It's very strange. But I do want to get specifically to the BHL case and then to talk about something bigger at the end. So let's, as Bill suggested, do a brief sort of timeline of this. Way back in, was it September of last year, maybe?
I think so.
Something like that. I had been approached maybe in August about Bethany coming in. And it seemed kind of off the wall, but I had Madden, and he was coming back in, and, you know.
Fairness doctrine.
Fairness doctrine. So I'm like Walter Cronkite. but I did say, I'm like, you know, we're gonna get into it, whatever. And then about a week later, they reached out to me again and basically said, no, we're all quitting. She's a thief and like a liar now. And these were people, as I mentioned before, like, Delaware way, like, I knew her from high school, I've known her my whole life, I went to this with her, they, you know, she, you know, whatever, you know, got me my job at the thing, what, who knows what. And even these people were getting ready to jump ship, and they did. And Chris Barish, I think, was the best person to cover that first, we'll call it phase one. He covered phase one. So once that came out, it was like, well, what is really wrong? What's wrong with the finances? And she had had the Dover firm help them sort of file new reports or try to amend their reports. But it gets referred to a real forensic examiner from the FBI, and they're like, I don't think so. So now we have the full redo of the campaign again. And again, when somebody from your staff is now your campaign manager, it's just like, I mean, you're trying to, you're standing up, you're getting up for the bell, but you're teetering. Your eyes are glassed over and you're having trouble keeping your hands up. So it's the end is nigh. So that's where this has been a long sort of drawn out sort of saga, and that's kind of where we're at. I think people are starting to wake up to the idea that, like, we can't have this. I'll put it to you guys. Bill and I covered the McGinnis case. We know it inside and out, I would say.
Fondly,
too fondly. It's disgusting.
It was where I followed to get all my information.
Of course. We told Steve Wood. He was like, oh, so here's a little thing we've been listening on. We know.
More and more people are saying that.
More and more people are saying it every day. More and more people should be going to patreon.com/thehighlandsbunker and giving us $5. There is a free, for patrons only, like 50-minute episode of Steve Wood outtakes. They're not really outtakes. It's just kind of fun stuff.
Kind of a jam session.
Yeah, it's a little jam. We talk about weird libertarian shit and all that. Where was I going with this? Oh, so I think that what I know of this case now over this almost a year with Bethany, what she seems like she's done is worse than what they've prosecuted Kathy McGinnis for. She went to trial and was found guilty of behavior that wasn't this bad because she didn't steal anything. And frankly, while the structuring financial bit of it was kind of complicated and really didn't do anything to benefit her, it was just kind of inept. It could have been against the law. The jury didn't think so. And that was kind of complicated. I have news for people. The Delaware campaign finance laws, like to be a treasurer, just to keep everything sort of like on the up and up, is not complicated.
No.
I'm sick of that fucking excuse.
Have you done simple, it so many times?
So look,
simple
you've
on
done,
purpose,
Bill,
I think
Bill,
with reason.
Bill has
a dummy can do it.
Bill has done it for a U.S. Senate campaign. Nurse Susan has done it and it's public, for Tizzy's first campaign. She's doing it for Nick Beard now and Val Gould. And Susan went to the office in Old Newcastle. She took the class, hour, whatever it was. She knows everything to do. She's like, this is what you do, and then you don't get in trouble. So let's not pretend that this is fucking so complicated we can't even fathom what they did. They were just shoving tunneling money around. I don't know if they're why they were doing it, just for cash flow.
Oh no, there was like a little detail today about credit card points, which I found pretty delicious, because I think that was like maybe the thrust of a lot of it was
so
that
it's the like husband, the laundering it for the credit card.
Husband slash treasurer is making Chase Sapphire Rewards purchases for campaign expenses, like 1,000 signs or whatever, and then getting those points, getting to stay in the cool lounge at the Philadelphia airport, and then asking for a reimbursement from the campaign committee account, either made out to him or to cash, like 100 times they were checks going to him or made out to cash, which is just suspicious.
Yeah, look, I'll say this. We've said what we had to say about Kathy McGinnis. She's not a fucking thief.
The one thing I just want to, like, and we can go more into it, but, like, the thing that really drove me crazy, too, that nobody is talking about is that communication between the elections commissioner and the lieutenant governor.
Right, right.
In any world that we lived in, like, 6 months ago, the entire General Assembly would have been all over that, asking the governor for resignation. I mean, it was a cover-up.
Mm-hmm. This is when she was basically saying, like, the report's still draft form, right?
Well, but, no, I think he said something like it was reported that he wasn't going to release it publicly, even though it said all of that. But if he got FOIA, he'd have to release it. This guy should have been impeached yesterday.
But then the lieutenant governor wrote back, thanks for keeping this confidential. Yeah. This is a woman who wants to be our governor. This is, right? I mean, what paid for that report is state dollars to have the consultant do it. Like, and I get what she's doing is awful, but like also, like how is that not a story anyplace? That there were these two top elected officials that were trying to, I mean, that's the whole House Bill 1 open government when we took the majority in 2009 and blew the place up, because that's the shit that they always did, is they hid everything and there was no way you could FOIA or get it.
Well, here's the difference. Are you ready to have your world rocked? It's actually very obvious. I mean, you wrote about it today. Kathy McGinnis didn't really have, I mean, Pete and kind of like Ernie Lopez and those kind of people have a certain kind of sachet in certain places, but not really. But when you're Bethany and you're like Team Carney and you're Team Val and you're Team Mimi, you're like, you got a little... You know, you're gonna get a protection. And so nobody, like, correct. Like, imagine if McGinnis had an email exchange like Al Benz, wherever his name is, and Bethany. How that people would have fucking lost their minds. They went in a special session three summers ago. So the point, the reason that they're not, is because the people in the legislature that would go into special session are her friends. And the people who were in legislature who went into special session because McGinnis got found guilty of, like, I don't know, doing her job bad, basically, official misconduct, they're not Kathy's friends. And so one person gets a special session and one person does not get a special session.
Hypothetically, do you think Bethany would preside over her own special session?
That's incredible.
Like, in character.
She's like, hey, we're going to go over here. We're going to talk about how much money we stole.
Mr. Speaker Clerk,
put that, it's a report, not an audit, into the record. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Joking aside, and I'd like, maybe you can comment on this. It really is insulting to people who follow it, and even to people who don't follow it, and just expect just the minimum amount, like not even competence, just not law breaking.
Right. And 100%. I think that's the thing we have to remind ourselves right now. If you look at the polls, regardless of who's the head, whatever, like that consistent 40% that's undecided. You then look at, for example, my opinion piece today, which I shared on my personal Facebook page. You know, the last time I checked, I think it was like over 100 people. I would say about 70 of them are non-political friends who had no clue that this was going on, but are now commenting, and this is disgusting. And thank you for speaking up. So what this shows you, right, is we're including us here now. Like, we're all inside this bubble. We think everybody's talking about it. But the reality is, like, once the voters are finally paying attention, it's usually 2 weeks or so before the primary. But it is disgusting and insulting, as you said, to the average everyday person here in Delaware who thinks that these people that we've elected into these high places are being ethical, sound, fair, right? And so You know, I know that's where I got really frustrated last fall when the story came out, and then it just kind of died. I'm like, how does something like this just die? And I had to remind myself.
Because there's no teeth in the election
right.
law.
Like, there's the election law, the reporting here in Delaware.
Yeah,
there's no television station, DETV.
Right.
I mean, are they a friendly station, or did they do a friendly interview?
Yeah.
What the fuck's the difference? I mean, but Carl, we know you do good work.
Yeah,
I guess what I would like to say is that the reason that this is happening is because whether it's the journalism side or the campaign side, I mean, we got campaigns going on, and so people are getting bullied, right, by basically what are friends of Bethany. I mean, are we going to, I don't know if we're ever going to talk about it, but yeah, everybody knows that people are getting bullied, getting weird text messages, getting spoken to in the way that Carney spoke to you. And being told, you know, you're fucking up our shit. Yeah, because you're getting your sapphire points. Yeah, we're fucking up your shit. And people got to get real about that.
Yeah.
And I think you have. I mean, that's sort of your journey. Like, that's where you're at right now. You're
and
like, you're having
thing,
an epiphany almost.
Yeah, epiphany. But the other interesting thing is, like, the past, what is it now, 72 hours, whatever, since last Friday, I was expecting to really get nasty text messages from people. Like, especially, but, you know, what I often say to people, and it took me a long time to get this, but friends made in politics are friends lost in politics. Like, for a long time, these are my friends, right? But they weren't my friends. They were my work associates or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, we talk about that at the legislature.
But
I
got nothing but positive. And there was just one negative text, which was just, you know, disappointing. And that was from Betsy Marin. You know, I at least out of respect, because
you should have been like, I'm also extremely disappointed.
But I was, you know, I was trained well in this. And like on Friday before I, you know, was doing this press release, I was like, you know what, just out of respect, because I have gotten to know Betsy. She's a friend in politics. I'm going to give her the heads up that I'm doing this statement. Yeah. So I called her. She wasn't able to take that, but I put it in a text. And that has me just feel like I felt really good, because I'm like, I gave her, like, it wasn't blindsiding her. It's just, and that's the part of the Delaware way that I do like, right? That years ago, you at least, you were about to attack your opponent, but you would just say, hey, you know, a lot of times, like, I would go out for beers. Like, when I was president of the Young Dems, I would go out for a beer with the president of the Young Republicans, and we'd have debate watch parties. So there was that piece. We've obviously now way beyond that, I should say. But I was really ready to get blown up, and I've been ready to get blown up on social media. Like, and people aren't saying, you know, I mean, the most I've heard is chatter third person. And Chris Barris actually reached out saying that Bethany's team is saying the only reason you're doing all this is because you worked for Matt. And I said, well, tomorrow morning there'll be an opinion piece that will lay out the full reason, which is a lot more driven by my role in the party and what I think of endorsements. And then if I, you know, lay it out, then that, yes. I mean, ultimately, I mean, I think a year ago at this point, yes, I had worked for Matt, but I was really a person interested. You know, what was frustrating about the gubernatorial 8 years ago is, like, the governor put nothing out. There was no policy platform. There was no positions. And so a year ago,
we noticed that,
I'm
actually.
Like, I want to just see.
On top of that.
No,
like,
results.
And it wasn't that I was like anti-Matt or anti-Bethany. I'm like, I just want to see what these two people put forward. And then, you know, later on, Colin got in the race. And I was really thinking that's what was going to help drive my decision. And then obviously all this shit broke loose.
Yeah, it's such a weak. Like, first of all, you're in politics, so everybody's doing politics. Everybody knows that. Number one. Number two, if you're comparing two candidates and people are calling, you know, and people are looking at the work you did and it looks financially shady and potentially illegal, and, you know, we already have questions about, you know, say her husband's behavior around politics and uprooting signs and shit. Like, if you're that far into it, you got a problem. And so, yes. You know, people are going to be mad and endorse Meyer because they want Meyer to win, because the other person looks like a thief. Like, it's just it's a stupid conversation to have. Like, of course, if we found out again, and I've been the one thing, I'm not as blind. I'm just blind. I'm not blindly loyal. Like, I have expectations of people. And if they don't do it, they can politically go to hell. Like, they're still my friends, but I sit in here and I tell them exactly what I think of them. Because it's not, the project isn't, that's not what the political project is about. And if people don't want to handle that, if people want to get petty about it, I don't really care.
Right. And they shouldn't be in the business. That's the reality. I mean, yeah. it took me 22 years to realize, like, my core is not made for this. And I used the alcohol and stuff to get me through it, right? But, like, I last summer realized, you know, as I'd sent my letter of resignation to Auditor York from the Utah airport coming back from the retreat, that, like, I can no longer handle this environment for me. Like, it's not healthy for me. It's not healthy than what I bring home to my kids, to my husband. But, like, that's what others should be doing. Like, if you can't handle this, then get out. But this is politics. And this is the way the game is played. The other thing, which I definitely early on never agreed with, was just the, we don't go negative in Delaware.
Well, and they're just, again, they would do it in your position. Like, right. That only counts. They're just saying that because they got. Yeah. That's it. And they're trying to enforce, it's like, I was going to talk about the spirit of cricket, but like the unwritten law, like they're trying to enforce like the norms, and the norms don't exist. That's all fake. Like, people have to make decisions based on what their project is and who is better. And this brings up the way I wanted to end it. And I think it might kind of go a little bit longer because I think people are going to have their own opinions about this. But former Delaware Democratic Party chair, former worker for all the people that you mentioned. I struggle with figuring out what the Delaware Democratic Party stands for. Like, how would you define it? How would you define the people that are in it and what they're trying to achieve? Because what I see from the very top with Uncle Joe, who may or may not realize he's funding a colonial massacre, all the way down to Carney and his minions like Saron Cade, who are trying to privatize pensioners' health insurance. These are all Democrats, Delaware Democrats. Privatize pensioners' health insurance. Spend $200 million on a port to give away. Protect the police at all costs. And these are all the Democrats. So I struggle to figure out what the project is and why I'm supposed to like it. Because if there's a political project, like you're trying to get other people to join, like organize it, and I don't get it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, for me, in my time as chair, and even before I came chair, it was the party platform. And I always led a very robust process where we'd go throughout the state. Because when I first came in, I was actually, believe it or not, in 2005, Bethany Hallong and Tim Willard, an attorney from Sussex, were appointed by the state party chair to write the platform for the party. There was a committee. And then I was the staff person, volunteer. What they all said to me is, just write a platform, Eric. Nobody cares about the platform. And that was done, and nobody looked at the platform.
Right.
So then years forward, like, a lot of the progressives started coming forward. And then, you know, Chairman Dinello, it blew up, and he didn't know what he was going to do. So I said, form a committee, appoint me as chair, and I'll run a very robust, we travel amongst the counties, et cetera. The reason I'm saying that is I then, when I became chair, used that literally was my North Star, the platform. Like, I got my ass called down to Dover to the Senate caucus saying, how dare do you as the party talk about common sense gun reform? And I brought copies of the platform. Jesse Chatterton was with me. Dave McBride was the pro tem. Senator Poor was the leader. And I said, it's the platform means nothing. I said, that is my North Star. Governor Carney, when I put out a press release and an email to all the legislators to repeal the minimum wage. Remember the mess that Mike Ramone had?
Right.
Again, hauled into party headquarters. The governor wants to have bro time with you, just the two of you, not Jesse.
No thanks.
Right, and
you know what? I'm doing anything else.
This is your. And said to me, "This is my party." And I said, "It is not your party. It's my party." I talked about the operating budget. So, yes, I get your frustration 100%. And there's a lot of people, including some of these electeds, that say the party platform means nothing. But let me tell you, if you look at that platform and look at the people who've knocked out incumbent Democrats over the last 2, 4, 6, 8 cycles in the General Assembly, it's because they have not looked at the party platform. They don't believe in the party platform. And the party platform's okay if the party endorses you, and I'll say I'm in favor of it. But when they get to Dover, it's a different game. Oh, my district, that. You know, the problem is you can't, I mean, you know, at one point somebody said, well, can't you have people sign an affidavit when they file to run that this is the party platform and they'll stand by it? But, like, that's not going
to hold up. We're going to sue them? We're going to take them to court?
Right.
I'm going to take, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go looking at taking Cindy Romer to court. Bill, can you write up a lawsuit on that affidavit, please?
But if you don't have something like that as your North Star, you have these candidates then, right? Then what, the party apparatus, the state exec committee, it becomes a popularity contest. It's the people you've known who are cool. I mean, if you look at what happened, and I wasn't in the room, but what I've heard from a pretty reliable source, the way this endorsement went down for Bethany, it was out of the gate, like it was an endorsement meeting. Shaku Bayou, who is an attorney, who is an at-large appointment by Betsy Marin, who is also on Bethany's campaign committee, made a motion to endorse Bethany Hallong by affirmation. And it passed.
Everybody
in that room is pissed, but nobody freaking speaks up. They let it happen.
Right. Yeah, right? Of course, because there's obviously this has been
they're
set
collegial.
Up. Set up because when you sat there before, 25 years ago or whatever, I don't mean to date you.
It was 22 years ago.
Okay, 22 years ago.
I was 25.
Right. Yeah. Everybody did the same thing. You
100%.
Did.
I was at that point, John Dinello saw me as a young Democrat working for Ruth M. Minner. He appointed me to an at-large member for Newcastle County Democratic Committee. But before those endorsement meetings, we would have meetings, and I would be told how I was going to vote.
Yeah, of course.
And be loyal to the appointing authority, Eric. Right?
But now this is so. Let me take it a step further. So this is sort of like the inner workings of and the machinations of the administration of the party. But what's if? And again, nobody looks at the platform, and you can't make anybody sign an affidavit. All you can ask them is, what do you want to do? Like, what are you looking to do? How does this fit into your career? Why do you want to do this? What motivates you? And will you sort of stick your neck out and do the things that you think you should do?
Right. And sometimes when you get elected, like, you have to do what's right, not what's popular. Right. And that's why I always loved working for Speaker Gilligan. Like, we would be in that caucus room, and the number of times that he, like, caucus, I can't vote for that. And it was like, whether it was a tax increase or whatever. And he would hit the table and say, you get elected to govern. You don't get elected to get reelected. And would browbeat. And people followed it then and would listen to it, right? But now that is just not the case. And you could argue, maybe that's good sometimes. Maybe it's bad, right? But like that
mentality. Well, I mean, it's definitely bad.
Yeah.
I mean, because if you have no sort of material thing to do other than be there and make sure that you didn't make anybody else angry, and you sort of like made sure that the things like the corporate amendments and those things got passed and the bond bill gets passed and that nothing else gets passed or whatever. And if that's what then it's and you're just worried about the relationships you have to make sure all your fake friends aren't mad at you. That's worse.
Yeah.
That's like, I don't know anything about Bob Gilligan. I don't know enough about him. But I will say that whatever you said he did and this, that was better before.
And the other interesting thing is in what you're saying is like, that's what Bethany has done. So when you become a career politician, right? Like, I was told the story this week and I had totally forgot that, the smoking ban was passed and signed by Governor Minner in 2003. There was an introduction to repeal the smoking ban. And guess who voted for that?
Bethany.
The nurse.
Yeah.
Right. The public health champion. There was the Mail piece that came out yesterday that she was like, her rating with the NRA was an A+. All this money from the NRA that she was going to, like, marriage equality. I was the state director for marriage equality. I was a constituent of Bethany's, was meeting with Bethany. We'll never forget the day at Legg Hall. And this was 2 weeks before the vote. But she said, Eric, I cannot vote for this bill. When I leave this building someday, all as I have is my family and my father's calling and reading me the scripture every day. So what did we do for marriage equality? We put 2,000 phone calls, handwritten letters out, and then ultimately she became the 11th vote. But this is where I get frustrated with the gay community, LGBTQ+, because like, but she gave us the 11th vote. I'm like, but can you remember the heart, like what we had to go through to get it? So yes, thank you. We got it done. But this is what she did over the years. Those were the years when people said the death penalty, it was in the platform. Oh, I can't vote for the repeal of the death penalty, Eric. I can't.
They're still saying this, by the way. This hasn't stopped. I don't know if you guys saw the death penalty, the constitutional amendment. They're still saying it.
Yeah. Did the governor end up? Did that get signed?
So they passed the statute.
Right. Oh, that's right.
They didn't even pass the first leg. Of the big victory was actually getting the first leg of the amendment to the floor. So we had to go in, you had to prostrate yourself in front of Val and go in there and grovel. And I will give Lex credit as well, because Lex wrote a great piece on it. And many of the organizers think that might have pushed it to the floor, at least to get a floor vote, but it didn't pass. I mean, obviously it has a high threshold, yeah, but it didn't pass.
Yeah. But the reason I was saying all that is, like, this was all the stuff for years that was in the party platform that in Dover they would tell you it didn't matter. But what finally caught up is the constituents were getting frustrated. And then you were getting progressive candidates that were running on those issues and stuff being blocked up. So not probably the answer you were looking for about what it means to be in the Democratic Party, but, like, that platform for me was always what I went back to. And if something was happening in Dover that didn't pertain to the platform, I would not comment on it. But if something, unless, I mean, the part people got upset with me, for example, Melanie George at one point, she was running for reelect and didn't live in the district anymore, and claimed that she rented a room in her treasurer's townhouse. And I put out a press release calling her out on it, and was, again, the governor got mad at me, and Melanie, like, you don't air the, you know, our family's dirty laundry. I'm like,
yeah, it's not a family, bro.
I can't call out Republicans that are doing this and then not call out the Democrats for doing the same thing.
You said something very, very important that I'm going to just harp on a little bit, because while maybe, like you said, maybe the answer isn't satisfying, you said something I think we can talk about. Because it happened actually with Carney and the marijuana legalization, that it passed overwhelmingly, but then he vetoed and we had to go over the thing. And it was like his personal belief. Well, nobody voted for your fucking personal beliefs, bro. Like, that's not how the fucking government works. And it made me think of the conversation you had with Bethany about her dad calling and reading her the Bible scriptures. Well, I mean, that's nice. At least you get to talk to your father, but nobody gives a shit.
Right.
Like, you're right. A fucking legislator. I don't fucking care what your dad said. Oh, your dad. Oh, you can't talk to your dad at Thanksgiving, so you're not going to fucking legislate properly? Number one, if it's true, you're an asshole and you should be fucking sent out. Number two, I don't really think it's true. I think it's just an excuse. Because I think that she's probably made other votes that maybe he didn't like or didn't like. You know, who knows? It's all of these fucking excuses about what other people are going to say or what the lobbyist said. Now, the lobbyist's not going to be my friend. The guy from the FOP is my friend.
Or the churches. She always would argue that Section 896 is the Bible Belt in my district.
Yeah, it's not the Bible
Belt. All the conservative
churches. And so here's what people have to learn to do. Obviously people are going to have to go in and grovel. That's just sort of part of it. But there's going to have to be a stick. Big stick. The people get called out on their fucking shenanigans. And this is why the Delaware way, as described, is so nefarious, because it treats everybody as a little incestuous little family. And if somebody's stealing a couple hundred grand, or somebody's pumping money, or getting somebody a job at the police athletic league, or getting you know, the good Section 8 lists, or, you know, making good real estate deals, or putting a hotel across where there's going to be development, or any other fucking myriad of things these fucking crooks do. It has a mafioso tinge to it. And when people say, well, I'm just going to veto it because I don't believe in it, or my father's mad, these people need to be called out and run out on a fucking rail.
And this is part of why I'm here today again, right? Because I sat there quiet for so long, I don't want to say had to do it, right? But, like, finding myself where I am last year, I'm like, you know, and literally if you look at, you know, for those that are familiar with the different chakras in your body, the way I explain it to people is my throat chakra, I use so fucking loud to get people elected, but I never used for what I believed in, for what my morals and values were. And so, you know, 2 weeks ago, I'm like, to sit quietly on the sideline and by chance have Bethany pull this off, shame on you, Eric. Like, say something. So...
Well, I appreciate you coming in. I have to say that we do give, and I think we gave credit to when this first happened, and we were talking about how in Delaware you don't really see people's longtime friends from high school sort of turn on them in a public way, and we gave those people credit, because that's sort of what we're trying to fight against, is this idea that it's like this sort of nefarious criminal enterprise, and we're going to do what we're going to do, and as long as we do it for each other, then, you know, that's fine. It's not fine. And so I do have to give you a lot of credit, because you were sort of at the crucible, right? Because you have these huge high power politicians that are the Delaware Democratic Party, but you also need to administer the Delaware Democratic Party. And so I know you were in it for a long time, and it takes a lot of fucking guts to come up here and say and say what you think.
Well, I've definitely enjoyed it, and anytime you guys want me back, I'd be happy to.
Erica,
thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thanks. There you go. Thanks. That's very nice.
And very appropriate.
Right. Yeah. There might be some work that you might find a little more fulfilling at the Delaware Working Families Party, possibly. Because I can tell you that the people that are high on the list of people we just talked about are very mad at the Delaware Working Families Party.
And I will say, sitting here right now, right, and whoever listens to the podcast, like, I mean, what I was saying up until about 2 weeks ago is I was waiting to vote for Matt and then going to switch to be an independent. Like, I was just tired. But, I've been reading and looking and seeing and...
Yeah,
I mean, what the Working Families Party has done and what they've... And for years, it was always, like, because it was taught to me, right, by the... Like, they're bad. But I think the evolution and what it stands for.
Did they say
now,
it like that, too?
I mean, there were times before... Like, this was back in 2008, 2009. People could run on the ballot as two.
Yeah, and Republicans used to.
Correct.
But
Chairman Dinello, people that got endorsed by the Working Families Party, he threatened to not give them resources.
Interesting.
So they would get booted unless they dropped the Working Families Party. So thank you for the invitation.
Sure. Well, here's what I'll say. As I said a week or two ago, we should be inviting, nay, welcoming, a certain hue and cry from our political enemies. And so that's all fine. You can stay mad, as far as I'm concerned. So thanks again, Eric.
Yep, absolutely.
And left is best.